Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and I've realized, like maybe you have, that over the next 12 months, we're going to have a steady progression of 75th anniversaries of significant World War II events, culminating, of course, with the 75th anniversary of VJ Day in a little less than a year. This will be the last significant round of anniversaries while a remnant of our greatest generation is still with us. So let's make sure we mark those anniversaries and give those courageous Americans the credit they're due. The Friends of the National World War II Memorial is an organization committed to doing exactly that. That's a great follow on social media, by the way, if you want to stay updated on World War II anniversaries. This week, the memorial in our nation's capital had four such ceremonies, including two on the same day, September 17th. You heard General Mark Schwartz's introduction to Operation Market Garden. Now, again with the memorial's fountain roaring underneath, here's the general on two dramatically different battles unfolding 75 years ago this week on two islands just 6 miles apart in what is now the Republic of Palau, east of the Philippines.
Concurrently in the Pacific Theater, on September 17th, the 81st Infantry Division, newly formed, continued the campaign of Palau by conducting the amphibious landing of Bongar. And while Marines wrestled with controlling a neighboring island of Peleliu, Bongar was successfully fought and captured in just 4 days. However, the resistance certainly wasn't over then. There were still significant Japanese defenders in a whole series of cave complexes that harassed American troops.
And we've heard from quite a few of those American troops over the years. A great book, by the way, on the Battle of Peleliu is Brotherhood of Heroes by Bill Sloan. One of its subtitles is The Bloodiest Battle of the Pacific War. The 1st Marine Division certainly found that out. So how crazy would it be for someone in the less volatile Battle of Angar, 6 miles away, to volunteer to head to Peleliu and its infamous Bloody Nose Ridge? Chuck Munson of the 154th Combat Engineers did exactly that.
Well, we'd had all sorts of amphibious landings. I landed on the coast of California 3 or 4 times on San Clemente Island and on Guadalcanal. So we were all ready to, we knew how to get in those PT boats and go in a circle and come in a wave. And I still remember to this day when we were at Anguar going in on, I was in this Higgins boat, and there was 40 guys in there, all of them with loaded guns, and I knew how flaky a lot of them were. And I was about as worried by them all with loaded guns as the Japanese on the beach, you know. But we had an uneventful landing, and but at night, you could hear these land crabs walking around, and you'd swear it was the Japanese coming. And we took turns in the foxhole. But it was, we had kind of a quiet time in our part of Anguar, and a call came out that they wanted volunteers to go over and help the Marines on Bloody Nose Ridge. And about 40 of us volunteered to go that. And I was reading a company history recently, and they call them the 40 Fools.
And this is all, this is on the island of Peleliu, so all before Okinawa and Iwo Jima and all of that.
Yeah, we were on Anguar, which is a smaller island off of Peleliu. Uh-huh. So then we got in boats and went over to Peleliu Island and were slodging up through the jungle.
And you were one of the 40 fools.
Yes.
You wear that proudly.
I don't. But I was in a line of soldiers, and I got a bullet in each leg. And it felt like a 2x4 hitting me. And I felt the blood running into my socks, and I laid down. Well, I remember the second lieutenant said, when a bullet went right between his legs over my head. So then the fellas in the squad, they took small trees and threaded them through jackets and made a stretcher. They took their jackets and made a stretcher, and it took, probably took 8-10 guys all day long to get, carry me down out of there.
Now, for people who aren't familiar with the Battle of Peleliu, who aren't familiar with the catastrophic losses that occurred there that weren't expected because American forces had no idea how dug in the Japanese were, what kind of network of tunnels they had there. Describe for us what Bloody Nose Ridge was and what you guys were trying to do and what you later found out actually happened to you.
Well, I'm probably not that good at, but it was rough jungle land and it was jagged peaks. I wasn't involved that long, really. I was wounded soon and was on a troop ship going back to Guadalcanal. I thought I was going home, but I didn't. They sent me back to Hawaii.
Going back to Bloody Nose Ridge, and you're being wounded. I want people to understand what's happening here, because you guys didn't know where the Japanese were, right? You couldn't see Japanese forces. You were kind of blindsided, I bet, right?
I saw a jungle. And I was trained as a demolition man and had a satchel, explosive satchel on my back. This is a plastic explosive. I used to know it's like a big slab of
C4 or something.
C-do, yeah, yes. You could slap it up against a bridge and blow it out. But this was for blowing them out of caves and pillboxes. So, but I didn't get to that point. I got wounded before I got there.
When you talk about the explosives, I obviously didn't get the training you did, so I don't know how it works, but could those explosives be set off by gunfire? No, you had to detonate them yourself.
Most high explosive demolitions are rather stable and have to be set off with a blasting cap. You have a match compound in the blasting cap, and you set it off with a charge. Later on in Okinawa, I did a lot of demolition work blasting coral to be hauled off to make airports.
Grind it and make a runway out of it. Yeah. So you don't know where the Japanese are. You've got this satchel full of explosives. You're planning to maybe drop in some caves or chase them out of some bunkers. And then all of a sudden shots ring out? What?
There's 30 or 40 of us in a line going up this ridge. And it's rough going, you know. It's there's no path or anything. And all of a sudden the firing started and I got hit. Later on, people in my platoon were killed in the next day or two.
It probably crossed your mind when you did get hit, if you got shot in both legs, that you could die right there on Bloody Nose Ridge.
You know, my first thought was I was going to go home a hero and see my wife. But I didn't. I got married just before I went overseas. It was a good feeling to get down out of there and be put on a Jeep ambulance thing and taken to a tent, you know, and then very soon I was taken out to a hospital ship and put on it. And in about 3 days, I walked to the bathroom because I couldn't stand the bedpan. And so I was walking in 3 days. Kind of a comical note was in this hospital in an island close to Guadalcanal Island, and one of the orders would sweep the floor. He'd say, in those days, there was a song, Straighten Up and Fly Right. Uh-huh. And he'd say, Straighten Up and Die Right. Straighten Up and Die Right. Funny.
Yeah, I'm sure that goes over real well with a bunch of wounded soldiers around. Yeah,
a lot of them were hurt bad, you know. I saw some guys that were really hurt.
I imagine part of your mind was with those other guys that were still on the ridge, not knowing what happened to them. And if you were able to walk in 3 days after getting shot in both legs, sounds like maybe somebody was looking out for you, or maybe that wife back home was praying for you.
It's about a 27 caliber shell, and both of them went right into the bone. There's one right there.
A scar on your knee that's still here.
Still in the bone, and yeah, scar. I'm kind of proud of this because it shows I wasn't running away. It's sort of from the front, you know.
That is right above the knee from the front of the leg, so they didn't hit you in the back.
Lower, they'd have shot me in the knee, you know.
And then you wouldn't be walking. So you got hit in a pretty good place.
I think so, yeah. Later on, pieces of cartridge came out. Some of the cartridge came with the bullet, with the slug.
And you still have some metal in there?
Well, they left the bullets in. They never did operate. They just sprinkled sulfur powder in the holes, and I healed up, and they sent me back to another company to go to Okinawa.
So there is a piece of lead stuck in your femur just above your knee.
Both knees, yeah. Uh-huh. One here and one here.
Well, I guess that helps you straighten up and fly, right?
Yeah.
So after that, obviously you're recovering. You talked about being sent back to Hawaii. You probably were hoping they'd send you all the way to California and see your young bride.
Well, I thought sure that I was going home and have leave or something, but they didn't bother with that. They just sent me back to Leyte and put me in another company.
I'm curious, when you talk about your wife, and you married her right before you went over, so you guys hadn't had much time together as a married couple. A day, all of one day. Did you at least get to talk to her on the telephone, tell her you were all right?
No, never talked to her.
She got a telegram saying you're wounded?
I got wounded. I stopped getting mail for 6 months. And when I finally got it, they got it before I was sailing for Okinawa. And so I read letters, you know, all day long.
Well, I'm just curious, after coming so close as you did, and you still have the bullets in both of your knees to prove it, what were you thinking when you got sent back to Okinawa, and here you are in another bloody battle? Did you think you were going to survive it?
Oh, yeah. You don't think you're going to get killed, you know, when you're 18.
When you saw her again, saw that she was still there waiting for you, can you describe what that felt like after everything that you've been through, been wounded, survived some of the bloodiest battles of the Pacific War, and then you had that happy ending?
Well, it just felt wonderful. It was just really great. We went on. We'd married 62 years when she passed away.
When you think back about World War II, and when you think of your kids or grandkids or people that weren't alive while it was going on, what do you think is important for them to realize about what you and all the guys like you did?
They should realize that everyone pulled together. It was no sure thing that we were going to win the war. I never did have that invincible feeling. It was do or die, and we all pulled together. Everyone just, it was really great in a way, because I had a feeling that we were all together.
Chuck Munson, wounded on Peleliu's Bloody Nose Ridge with the 154th Combat Engineers, is still going, and he's still blogging at age 94. I have a link to his blog for you at hometownheroesradio.com, and we're not done yet. When we come back, another man wounded on Peleliu 75 years ago, and a couple decisions he made that saved his life. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.